This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, episode 18. I swear to God, nothing went my way on Saturday. Nothing. It was one of those days where you're just like, can we get a do-over? Just a total do-over? Of course, Dr. Rob is feeling that way, and I was feeling that way because, well, both our college football teams lost. Though, as we get ready to record this edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, I learned something today, and that is when it comes to military action, I'm a Marine and Rob is an Army guy. Marines go in first, right?
Sure. So you're gonna have to explain this to me.
Well,
here.
Because we're sitting in the basement and I'm batching it this weekend, right? And I hear somebody walking around upstairs, and you think it's the dog. I'm like, nope, I think it's somebody walking around. And I'm the one flying up the stairs, going, "We're going into battle." You're providing backup, man. I'm on the front lines.
Like I was right up the stairs right after you. Come on.
I'm not buying it, man. You're like, this is your house. You go protect it.
I've got nothing here of value except you. I value you, Travis.
Yeah, I'm like, why is the 5'11" and a half, 240-pound fat guy going up the stairs first when I've got this 6'7" monster that would just intimidate anybody at the door? Then we find out it's my son strolling in from his, oh, I'm going to road trip to Nashville for about 5 days and just drink.
God, it'd be great to be young again.
Yeah.
I think I said it when you first told me he went to Nashville. I wish I was at the age that road trips didn't kick your ass. Because it's like yesterday. I mean, I got together with you in Des Moines for a little bit.
You did. So. You were in Des Moines because you visited Grandview University, which is my alma mater, a very good NAIA program. But
they're
pretty damn.
They're number four in the country, yeah. Undefeated and number four in the country right now.
Now you visited number three Morningside, number four Grandview, both elite NAIA programs.
They're really good.
But they've in the games you've seen, they've played really bad competition.
You know, I think it's one of these things where at that level, you've got a handful of teams that are really, really good each year. It's not a ton. I mean, you got Grandview, what is it with Iowa teams, by the way? Because you got Grandview, Morningside, and Northwestern, who are all top five teams. And then there's Lindsey Wilson down in Kentucky.
That's true.
And that's it.
Well, like, Benedictine was in the championship game a couple years ago. They're down in Kansas. But I don't know what it is. And I think they do a pretty good job of getting local kids. But also, they find these kids that will come in from California, Texas. I know Grandview had a couple guys that like played at Mississippi State but didn't quite make the grade at Mississippi State. And when I mean that, they literally could not stay eligible. So they needed a place to play. And they ended up. So
it's a solid school. So they had Grandview's got a 67% med school acceptance rate.
Really?
That's like off the charts.
Well, that's pretty good then, right?
So that's really good.
As a doctor, that probably intrigued you. You're like, okay, we can go here.
Well, I'm not going to go to med school again. I've done that already.
No, I know. So. But do you have fun? Are you living vicariously through your son, or are you just
having... Oh my God, big time.
See, at least he lets you. My son won't let me live vicariously through him. He wants me as far away as possible. He wants nothing, you know, because he's in the music industry now. He's a fabulous singer-songwriter, and I try to learn as much as I can about the business. It's like
he's like no,
no, you no. Don't get to learn anything, absolutely nothing.
Well, and it's, you know, I'm not trying to push my kid one way or the other, or try and. I mean, if he wants advice, I'm going to give him advice, and I'm going to try and help him out as much as I can. But at the end of the day, it's one of these things where it's fun watching him go through this process. And there's obviously different levels. And I mean, I look at my nephew who went through this on a D1 level last year, and I'm going through it on an NAIA D2 level. Man, it's still fun. I mean, it's a blast. Football's still football. And the teams that he's lucky enough to have looking at him when you look at a team like Grandview, I mean, Joe Woodley, who's the coach there, which it's like the entire program started and has been coached by Woodley since day one.
And that's the truth.
Literally.
That is the truth.
Which, yeah, they were, the the honorary captain. This was against, the game yesterday was against Grandview's big rival.
William Penn.
William Penn, the statesman of William Penn.
Out of Oskaloosa, Iowa.
And so the honorary captain, since it was, and that's apparently, I learned all this as you're going along. So William Penn and Grandview, big rivals in football. One of their, the first game played between these two schools, they kind of talked us through the story of this, where Grandview had to line up to block a, what would have been a game-winning field goal for William Penn as time expired. Grandview blocked it and returned the blocked field goal, the blocked attempt for a touchdown to seal the win over William Penn. This was year one of Grandview football, which was it 2008?
Yeah, it's probably more than, you know.
Yeah, 2008, yeah. 2009 was their inaugural season. So inaugural season, they do that to win this game against their rival.
Do you have a rival in year one?
Yeah, it was all downhill after that for William Penn. So, but anyway, they had Mike Woodley, who was the coach who started the program there at Grandview. He was the honorary captain during the game today. So they had a really cool ceremony for him before the game. They got a plaque that they're putting up in the locker room, and he was there to accept it. Did the pregame speech, which they've put out on social media now, and so it's kind of a really cool tribute to him. But if you look at a program that it's a fairly new program, huge amount of success recently.
And what you're noticing is a couple things. And trust me, folks, we're going to get to Nebraska losing at Minnesota.
I'm trying to put that off talking about teams that actually win.
We want to prolong your pain a little bit, but I think we can transition into, you've been to Morningside, which has won a national title, or a couple at the NAIA level, Grandview, which has won a national title. It is, you know, we talk about culture at a Division I level. It's you don't have the athletes or the size, but the formula is the same.
But
right?
You have that at these other schools, and it's interesting to see that, because there's other schools that my son's talked with that are talking to him, that are trying to get him to come there, that don't necessarily have that. And it's easy to see, because when he talks to them, it's kind of one of these, he talks to the coaches, he looks at their program online, talk to some guys he knows that have gone there in the past, and it's just the interest just isn't there. And then you look at a place like Grandview or some of these other schools, and all of a sudden you see this, you see the way they do things, and all of a sudden you're like, huh, culture. There you go.
And it doesn't matter where you're at, what size of program, culture, and the way you run a program and have expectations and accountability usually means you're going to have somewhat a little bit of success. I'm sure what's cool about going to these smaller games, though, these kids are playing just for the fact that they want to play football. That's the only reason.
They love football. It's nuts. I mean, you can just see it when they're out there. Because I've had a lot of people asking me on Twitter today in terms of Nebraska, Iowa, mostly Nebraska, where it's like, how do you find the motivation to keep playing when you don't have something necessarily all that tangible that you're playing for? Bowl game, championships, etc. When you look at these kids at these smaller divisions, the motivation is just to be out there playing. They are ecstatic that they're just out there and have the chance to keep playing football. That's it.
Of course, I've said all along during the month of October, I'm going to encourage you to donate to Scareway Cancer. Scareway Cancer is a nonprofit organization I'm very involved with. In fact, our big celebration is coming up on October 23rd at Anthony's Steakhouse in Omaha, Nebraska. It is sold out. But each and every year, we give away a lot of money. We help people pay their bills. We help people, you know, if they need their car fixed, if they need anything. If you're going through a cancer journey, we're there to help. And in fact, we can turn around a check fairly quickly. Rob, this just happened last week. We got a call, a family going through cancer. They were going to be evicted from their place they were renting in 2 days if they didn't come up with money. And we paid like 3 months' rent for them. And we just said, okay, here's a three-month cushion. You know, just you don't have to worry about this right now. And that was, and we were able to do that within 2 days. And so it's run by all volunteers from MCL Construction. And if you want to, you know, donate, you know, $5, $10, $15, $25, we've had a $500 donation from a listener of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, which is so kind. Go to scarewaycancer.org. That's scarewaycancer.org. To place your donation. Of course, a big thanks to the sponsors of this podcast, including our presenting sponsor, the Remington Trophy. Talked to Dave last week, Rob. His knees are recovering.
Nice.
They haven't announced the day of the Remington Trophy celebration in Lincoln, but it's coming up.
But they're going to do it.
Yes. Right now, they're going to do it, and I kind of know when the day is going to be, but there should be announcing it here shortly when that's going to happen. So it's going to be good to see Dave come back to town and, of course, have his trophy presentation. A little bit later on in the show, we'll have Ticket Talk with Chad Carr. There is no game this weekend. The Huskers get a bye week. But there's still plenty of action going on in Lincoln, and Chad will tell you what you can get up to date with and where you can get your tickets for Husker volleyball coming up on Ticket Talk. And, of course, Scotty over at Husker Hounds, I've said it before, I've said it again, every Husker fan that was at the Minnesota game yesterday was outfitted with clothes that came from Husker Hounds because he sells to everybody. Nobody else gets their clothes anywhere else but Husker Hounds, three locations in Omaha, and, of course, at HuskerHounds.com. All right, we've put it off because, well, I mean, it's embarrassing, quite frankly. I mean,
I know. I couldn't believe the Hawkeyes folded like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you can't. Trust me, I can't either. It's funny because there.
Yeah, who are we going to talk about first?
For as much
here?
As it, you know, because you know, your buddy over there at 1620 the Zone, Michael Sevier, for some reason, I don't know if he likes me or not, but he
dude, you guys.
I don't know what.
I don't know what struck a chord with Michael.
It was weird, but whatever.
I think it was the Penn State thing. He's a Penn State guy.
I didn't say anything about Penn State. Or was it Iowa beating Penn State?
Yeah.
Jeez, let that
go. I think it's the fact you had that whole that whole Big Ten-wide Iowa-Penn State ticked off at each other. James Franklin doing the modern day version of "I'm a man" speech, and I mean it was just those guys. I mean, you had Kirk Ferentz doing his normal "I'm going to crawl inside your head and poke around."
That's exactly what he did.
Wizardry, which Ferentz does. I mean, he goes in there and he like pushes a couple buttons and leaves and looks like. I mean, you don't even know he said anything. Next thing you know, James Franklin's going off.
So, and this isn't going to be about Iowa. It's going to be about Nebraska. But you had something interesting on Twitter today because I think it was Mitch Sherman or somebody else. One of the players yesterday said they noticed the energy in the room.
I think it was Cam Taylor-Britt.
Cam Taylor-Britt.
He had commented on it.
And you said, listen, this was Iowa State in 93. Marv Seiler
92.
Still, or 92. 92. Marv Seiler, this is Iowa State in 92.
You think a Cyclone fan such as yourself.
Yeah,
because
I'm such
a
huge Cyclone fan. But you said it was similar that you knew it that morning that something quite.
Oh, yeah. It was not right.
And it took you 2 years to get over that or to break that.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it didn't take 2 years to get. Well, let's talk about that game in and of itself. I mean, so if you want to. Kind of to set
what,
the
Minnesota
stage.
Or Iowa State?
The Iowa State game. I mean, if you want to set the stage a little bit, 2 weeks prior, we played Colorado on Halloween night. That was the 92 Halloween night game where Tommy Frazier, true freshman, goes off. And you know what? We just got in the zone. You had I think it was a third-ranked Colorado team coming into Lincoln. And we just nuked them. That was the 51-7 game. It just destroyed Colorado. That was a good Colorado team. The very next week, now here's the other thing that, I mean, makes it even bigger. This was in the era when you had one big non-conference game that got on TV. The Oklahoma game would be on TV. The bowl game would be on TV. And then if you were really lucky, one other conference game would get put on television. Usually in that era, it was Colorado. So we had just played Colorado in a televised game, blew them up. The very next week, Kansas comes to town. This was the Glenn Mason era at Kansas. Not a real long time period, but within the realm of Kansas football, probably second only to the Mangino time period. Mm-hmm. So I think Kansas was, they were a top 10 team when they came to Lincoln in 1992. Now, nobody believes that now looking at Kansas, but you had Dana Stubblefield and Gilbert Brown on the D-line, both, or Chris Mamalonga as well. You had three D-linemen all went on to the NFL. Kwame Lassiter, longtime safety with the Arizona Cardinals. Had June Henley at running back, John Jones at offensive guard. Whole slew of NFL guys down at Kansas at that time period. And so they were a top 10 team coming to Lincoln right on the heels of this massive blowout we had over Colorado. And so I think it was ESPN decided, yeah, we need you guys to move this to a 7 p.m. night game because we're going to televise it. And so all of a sudden this became another big game, top 10 matchup, national television night game in Lincoln. Brought the lights in. Memorial Stadium didn't have its own lights at the time.
That's when Musco Lighting would make the trip, man.
Yeah, you knew this was a big deal when they brought the lights in. And we go out and nuke Kansas, top, I think it was seventh-ranked Kansas. We nuked them 49-7, just destroyed them. And so now all of a sudden, we had one loss. It was a kind of a close loss to a defending national champion Washington team at Washington. Washington had since lost. A couple of other teams had since lost. We were coming off of these massive top five, top 10 wins on national television. And all of a sudden, we had vaulted back up to, I think, third or fourth in the rankings. And a couple of teams lost that weekend of the Iowa State game. So I remember we were in a position where when the polls came out on Monday, if we had beat Iowa State, I'm not saying we would have been number one, but we probably would have been top two in the country with a chance at being number one. And so the opportunity was there. And I remember the night before the game, everybody's kind of loose, everybody's kind of lighthearted. We've nuked a couple of top 10 teams. And we always do a movie before the games, and we went and saw Disney's The Mighty Ducks. And I just remember, like, why the hell are we watching The Mighty Ducks? This is idiotic. I mean, we need an action flick.
You know who
we
picked that? Steve Peterson.
Probably. I'll blame him.
He was the football director of operations? Yeah, director of football operations at that time, wasn't he? Did he leave for Tennessee already?
No, I think he was at Tennessee at the time. Okay. Tennessee or Ohio State, one of the two. It was just not a good pick. Anyway, morning before the game, we're going through pregame warm-ups. We're getting ready in the locker room. And the guys on the team, before we run out onto the field, break into the Ducks chant. Ducks, 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 Ducks. And I'm just like, wait a sec, for real? We're really chanting Ducks before we run out to an actual Division I football game? We are not ready to play this fucking game. Okay. And we went out there and just...
And sucked.
Sucked.
Okay, but you guys were...
And that was a bad Iowa State team.
It was not good.
They were not a good
team.
When
Marv Seiler's your quarterback, you're not a very good football team.
No.
Not at all. But the difference is you guys were a really good football team at that point. I mean, you'd come off some really big wins.
Well, that's the thing. When you asked to get over that, it wasn't that it took us 2 years to get over that one game.
No.
What it took us 2 years to get over, and I will always say this, that 92 Nebraska team, hands down, that was the most pure talent that I felt we had in Lincoln in the 4 years that I played, 91 through 94. I thought 92 was actually the most talent we put out on the field in any one of those 4 years. All four were great, but I thought 92 was the best. But it's that mental and emotional aspect that plays a huge role in all of this stuff. And to overcome that kind of mental letdown, to have those two huge victories – and instead of having a letdown, being able to come out and say, hey, we had two huge victories. Let's take a look at what's at stake, and let's take a look at what we need to do to keep moving forward and not have a letdown. It took two more years to be able to develop that kind of mindset to not have a letdown. Or conversely, you look at the 94 season, to have the kind of mindset that can be able to work through multiple setbacks. When you look at the injuries to Tommy and Brooke, et cetera, it's the same type of mindset that allows you to get past both of those, whether it's to not get too high from success or get too low from setbacks. It took two more years to develop that. And that 94 team, that's part of the reason why I look at anytime somebody says, well, yeah, 95 was the best. And I'm sitting here going like, yeah, that was a really good team in 95. Mentality-wise, I don't think they beat us in 94, though.
But you look at Nebraska yesterday, and knowing of the how well you played against Michigan, how well you've played against Michigan State at times. I mean, I guess all these
Oklahoma.
Losses. Oklahoma. How are you not are you not paying attention to what's going on in the state? I think this is amazing to me.
Yeah, I think it's – I mean, there's a little bit of not seeing the forest for the trees aspect to this when you're going through that process. But it's – and I'll also say this, and this is one of the things I put out there on Twitter. It is insanely hard to get past that. I mean, I would probably say the vast majority of really, really good college football teams – never get to that point. The ones that win national titles do. I guarantee you, Alabama has that kind of mindset ingrained in them to an absolutely amazing degree. But to be able to learn the mental toughness that you don't have those letdowns, learning what you have to focus on that you don't have those highs and lows, it's hard. I mean, and that's part of the reason. I'm looping back here a little bit to Iowa because it's a good learning point. I think that's what happened with Iowa. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Purdue came in, had a great game plan, and played a great game. But you can't tell me that was Iowa's best effort.
Defensively, it wasn't, and even special teams. Now, I've said this all along, and you can go back to my morning show if you don't believe it. I've always said, if Iowa's defense doesn't show up one day, the offense is not good enough to win a game for that team. And that's what happened yesterday. The defense was unable to create turnovers. It couldn't stop David Bell, which, Rob, in the last three games, he has like 582 yards of receiving. I don't know why you think you can go one-on-one with a guy and get beat and burned. I mean, you know what they're going to do, and he still goes for 240 yards of receiving on 11 catches. And how about this number? That dude had 100 yards after catch.
And the guy's a talent. Don't get me wrong,
but see,
here,
but I said it was Iowa arrogance on defense because they've been so good. They're like, well, it's almost like, well, our formula works. We're not going to adjust.
But there's the adjustment aspect of it, I think. But I think it's also players being able to step up and make a play, too. I think it's both. And I think there is – now, here's the thing also. I think coaches can have that letdown also.
Okay, but my question is, how does Nebraska have a letdown? I don't understand that. There was nothing to have a letdown from. If anything, you should have been motivated knowing – and we said this last week. We called it a must-win.
Yeah, we did. Well, the part of it that I remember –
thank you for that. We're not drinking this week. We're recording really late on a Sunday night, so we're not drinking tonight.
I gotta work tomorrow.
I think Rob purposely said, can we record late at night so I don't pass out in your house again?
Anyway, probably not my best moment, but made for a funny podcast.
It did.
The stakes are different when you're looking at these situations, but the mindset is the same. In terms of what Nebraska had to do from a mental and emotional output to have the games they did against Oklahoma, Michigan State, Michigan, at some point, if you're riding on an emotional high, and I think they were, to have those games against some very good teams. I do think Michigan's a really good team. I think Michigan State's I don't think they're as good as Michigan, but I think Michigan State's a really good team. I think Oklahoma's a really good team. These are teams that are, I'm not saying they're going to win national titles, but these are probably legit top 10, at least top 15 teams in the country. I'm not saying any one of those three is top five, but they're top 15 teams in the country. And for Nebraska to be in position to knock off all three of them, I think took a huge amount of mental and emotional effort. Now, at the same time, I think they had a big mental and emotional letdown. I mean, some of it's believing we're now this good, we don't have to get up mentally or emotionally to have the kind of output that we had against Michigan. Some of it's just that tank runs dry. And you've got to learn at some point that you're playing against teams like Michigan and Oklahoma and Michigan State. You got to learn to play effectively, to play with success, and it's not based on emotion. And that can be, and again, that's a learning process, and it's incredibly hard to do. And I see that. I mean, when you look at Iowa, you can't tell me there wasn't an emotional component to that win over Penn State. I think
I would agree with you on that.
I think now. Right now, Iowa's at a different level. I'm not saying Iowa's playing at the same level as Nebraska, but I think Iowa's going to go into a lot of these big games against these top 20 teams like Penn State, and if they get on enough of an emotional high, they get the ball rolling, they're fired up, and they can maintain that for four quarters, they're going to win some games. But if that tank runs dry, watch out. Now, again, I get what you're saying about how, hey, if the offense doesn't show up.
No, if the defense.
Or, I'm sorry, if the defense doesn't show up, the offense isn't going to win games. But, you know, at the same time, too, I thought the offense did what it had to do against Penn State to win that game. I think the offense was capable of beating Purdue.
But
they just didn't
four interceptions ain't going to do it.
No,
I mean that's not going to do it for any team. I mean, you turn the ball over
but
that
much. And part of it is too, they never really got their run game going, which is something you've talked about. How they've got to be able to basically hammer teams to be able to open everything else up.
For the record, it's Dr. Rob bringing up Iowa more than I am. Just to let everybody know that. It's time for Ticket Talk, brought to you by Ticket Express. Our good friend Chad Carr, owner of Ticket Express, back on the podcast with us. And Chad, how you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
You know, I batched it this weekend, so my wife's been out of town, my kids have been out of town, so I've been all by myself, which is it's kind of an eerie feeling. I don't know if I like being by myself. You get used to having your kids and your wife around. They leave you, and you're like, huh? I enjoy being married. I like having my kids around.
Well, there you go. There you go.
You know, of course, Nebraska got beat by Minnesota. They have the off week coming up, but it doesn't mean you're not going to be busy because a team that's really doing well down in Lincoln would be the Nebraska volleyball team. They're on the road on Wednesday, but they got two back-to-back matches after that on the 23rd and then the 27th at the Devaney Center.
Absolutely. So, you know, Nebraska football might have a bye week, but Nebraska athletics marches on, and the Nebraska volleyball team is on a tear right now. They've won their last eight matches, you know, and they're back in the top 10 and they're looking great. So big games coming up against Purdue and Wisconsin. Purdue's Saturday the 23rd, Wisconsin's Wednesday the 27th, and then they've got the big game on November 19th, or I should say match, Penn State coming up as well. So lots of great volleyball action to be seen down at the Bob Devaney Sports Center. The Lady Huskers are looking great.
You know, it's interesting because I remember when they played in the Coliseum. Hell, there's probably some people who don't even remember that. But, you know, and you're thinking, okay, they're going to go to the Devaney Center. Is it still going to be a tough ticket? And is demand for volleyball still there?
Still there. I mean, it's absolutely insane. We thought the same thing when they moved to the Devaney Center, and every one of those games is a sellout. And, you know, it is literally the toughest ticket to get down in Lincoln right now is to go see women's volleyball.
You know, everybody talks about Nebraska football, of course, Nebraska volleyball. You're big into the College World Series. But, you know, you got to remember there are other sporting events that take place, especially on the professional level. I know a lot of Packer fans, I know a lot of Bears fans, Vikings fans, Chiefs fans, Bronco fans. How much do you dibble dabble in the, and I shouldn't say dibble dabble, how much do you work in the professional sports arena with tickets?
A ton. And, you know, we have access to tickets all over the country for all the different major sports. You know, right now the Major League Baseball playoffs are going on. We can get you to tickets to see whatever team that you want to go to. If you want to go to NHL hockey, we're huge into professional sports as far as NFL is concerned. And, you know, Omaha's kind of a melting pot. Like, everybody thinks, oh, everybody's a Denver Broncos fan or a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Not true. Like, there are fans of every NFL team in the city. You know, and if you want to go see the Steelers, if you want to go see the Bills, whoever you want to go see, and of course the Chiefs, we can help you secure tickets to whatever you want to go to. You know, whether that is, you know, going to the Masters, down in Augusta, or, you know, going to the Super Bowl, we can help you with everything in between.
And what Chad means by that, if you go to the homepage at TicketExpress.com right now, you can actually get tickets to the Pro Bull Riding Unleash the Beast event next Sunday, or the 24th, which is a Sunday, at Pinnacle Bank Arena. So when you say everything, you mean everything.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, anything in Vegas. If you want to go see Lady Gaga in Vegas, we can help you with that. If you want to go to the National Finals Rodeo at the Thomas and Mack Center, we can help you with that. You know, literally anything. Anything that you can dream of, we can help you secure tickets to.
And it's easy to search right on your website, TicketExpress.com. Chad, always good checking up with you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Chad.
We'll get to the Nebraska offense, and people, of course, want to know about the fourth down play. Do you kick a field goal? Do you go for it? We'll get into that. But Minnesota's offense was meticulous, almost surgical, like yesterday. I mean, the way they held onto the football, the efficient on 21 of 25
passing. Yeah,
at
halftime, I looked at the team stats, and it's just, oh, my God, it was brutal.
You know, they run for 182 yards on 43 attempts. It was meticulous. Nebraska was still in it, but Minnesota set the tone early. 38 minutes of time of possession.
And that was brutal.
38 minutes.
And in the first half, it was, I mean, I think it was a little more disparate. What's the term I'm looking?
Disparity?
Yeah, the disparity, thank you, was greater in the first half.
He's the
doctor. So, it was brutal looking at those statistics. You know, a couple people pointed out it was interesting. And you go back and watch it. Because, like I said, I had to watch the replay of the game. I didn't watch it live because I was watching Grandview destroy William Penn. I was watching a good football team.
But my point is the defense, it was susceptible against Michigan and now against Minnesota. I guess I was surprised. I thought the defense was making a lot better strides.
I thought it was a very, very aggressive game plan against both Michigan and Michigan State. And actually, I thought the game plan against Oklahoma was fairly aggressive as well, too. I think they sat back and kind of had sort of this, let's wait and see what they do to us game plan against Minnesota. And more than anything is just they played really, I thought, really soft pass coverage. And a couple people pointed that out to me. And you go back and watch the game, and when I went back and watched it, it was. I mean, our defensive backs were giving those receivers a ton of room, especially in the first half. And that's something that I think they've played a lot more tighter coverage earlier in the year against Michigan, against Michigan State. They seemed more willing to get up in guys' faces and potentially risk, A, big plays, but also penalties. And that was something that I think they just didn't do against Minnesota. The other thing is they weren't able to generate a pass rush. Now, I don't think they were aggressively blitzing as much as they were against Michigan. But you got a guy like Tanner Morgan who is basically a statue. I mean, the guy, he's like a bigger, taller Marv Seiler. He also seems like, I swear to God, I know COVID and all that, but I swear to God he's been there for like 7 years. I can't wait till Tanner Morgan is no longer at Minnesota. That being said, the guy had all day to throw. They've got a solid offensive line. They did a good job of keeping Nebraska out of the offensive backfield. He had time, and he had receivers that did not have really tight coverage on him, and they were perfectly happy to play the game of, all right, we're going to take what you're going to give us, and we're going to take 5-10 yards a pop. I mean, the only play where it really jumped out at me, they had that 50-yard touchdown in the late in the fourth quarter, which essentially ended the game. But that's one of those things where I was kind of surprised seeing that out of Nebraska's defense. As aggressive as a defense that Nebraska's had over the previous month, to come out and kind of do this, hey, we're gonna play Minnesota like we're scared that we're gonna get beat by the deep ball. That's not what Minnesota's done to people this year. They haven't hammered people with this wide open vertical passing game, and so it just I don't know. I'm still scratching my head over that one. It seemed like the wrong way to approach this particular opponent, and I think it bit them in the ass.
So let's go to Adrian Martinez, too. So last week it's the turnover. It always seems to be something you can't trust Nebraska in a close game at the end. They've never proven it to you that they're going to make the right.
But you've got a team that is probably not that mentally tough. Now, I'm not saying Martinez isn't a tough kid. I think he's an incredibly tough kid.
He's snake-bitten because something bad happens to him in the late. I mean, turnover, safety against Minnesota. I mean, it's just –
you've got and here's the thing. I touched on this on social media too. I'm not, when it comes to quarterbacks, and you and I have talked about this before, like, hey, who are your top quarterbacks in Nebraska football history? And it's Brooke, Tommy, Scott, and Jerry Tagey. And everybody's
sure,
like,
sure.
Do you know what all of those guys have?
Championship rings.
Championship rings. And the one guy...
Did you notice how he moved Brooke ahead of Tommy this time? He goes, Brooke, Tommy...
It's alphabetical order.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I'm just saying, it's those four guys. How about this? Those four guys, no particular order. Okay?
All right. Okay, that's fair.
So, I mean, we'll go age-wise.
I'll concede to you.
Jerry, Brooke, Tommy, Scott. How's that? We'll go in age order there for you. It's championships. The guy I would probably put next in line in my mind would probably be Steve Taylor. Be the next guy that I'd put into that little pantheon. Just because I think he was maybe... I don't know if Steve was going to win a national title, but he was a conference championship winning quarterback at Nebraska. And had some really, really great teams. They just that was just Oklahoma was better then. I hate saying that, but I probably have Taylor then as the next one. The guys that just don't jump out at me are the stat monsters. The guys who are owning the record books. I mean, Martinez 1 and Martinez 2 are kind of the two guys. I actually really like Tommy Armstrong, and I think if you took Tommy Armstrong and stuck him on some of those title teams or even those late 80 teams that Steve Taylor played on, I think Tommy Armstrong is viewed hugely differently in the era because I thought Armstrong was a gamer. He was one of those gay guys. He was going to go out and try and figure out a way to win a game. And that was something I always loved watching Armstrong play. But when you look at Taylor Martinez, when you look at Adrian Martinez, I don't think anybody looks at those guys and goes, okay, I need somebody who can win a game. I need somebody who's going to go out there when the rest of the team is flat and is going to will the team to win. When the chips are down, you need a score, you're in a hostile territory. Who do you have that is going to go out and get you that win? Who's going to make the play when you got to have a play? you know, when you look at the last 25, 30 years of Nebraska football history, nobody's going to sit there and go like, oh, yeah, I want one of the two Martinez's as my go-to quarterback to go get me that win when I got to have it. It's going to be Brooke. It's going to be Tommy Frazier. It's going to be Frost. It's going to be a Taggy. It's going to be a Steve Taylor. It's going to be one of these guys who's proven that they can go get that win, who can will a team to win. And that's, in my mind, that's what you got to have as a quarterback.
Do you think if Adrian Martinez got one of these, his whole trajectory would change? Do you think he...
No.
No, oh, really? Okay.
And, you know, the reason I say that is just because I've seen way too much inconsistency. I think he's an incredibly tough kid. He really is. I think he's emotionally tough. I think he's an amazing athlete. But he's not the guy that's going to... I don't think he's the kind of guy that can will a team to win. I don't think he's the kind of guy who can consistently make the plays that you got to make to win.
Do you think he would have gotten a first down and fourth and inches?
Martinez?
Yeah, well, because that's what they're saying.
Well, maybe if he lined up under center.
Well, you know, it's interesting because people...
Yeah, I didn't like the play call.
It's interesting because Matt Campbell did with Brock Purdy at Iowa State earlier in the season. And it was fourth and short, and he went out of the shotgun, didn't get it. But they never run under center. So I'm like, I think they thought...
And there's a risk aspect to
no,
that.
No, you know what it was? You know, I'm sorry, I was wrong there. He went under center and fumbled, and okay. They never run under center.
Okay, I get that. There's a risk aspect to this. But here's the problem I have with that as an argument. As a coach, you need to be sitting there and going, hey, there's going to be some situations where we're going to be fourth and short, third and short, and we need inches to a foot to win the fucking game.
But you know,
and guess what you need to do? Practice putting your quarterback under center and running a sneak once in a while.
But when this happened, it's early enough in the game,
they
right?
Should have, yeah, this is preparation that you should have.
But if you don't make it, you're at that point, you're like, you take the points, you kick the field. You're damned if you do, damned
but
if you don't.
Yeah, Nebraska's now in a position where, and we've seen this season long. And again, when I say this, you know, I'm not trying to attack the kid here when you're talking about Connor Culp as the kicker. I get it. He's coming off of an injury. Maybe it is a case of the yips. Maybe it's still this recovery process of this injury where he just has not put the ball through the uprights. He hasn't kicked off. He just hasn't kicked the ball enough to be able to get that consistency back. But you've got a kicker right now who you cannot count on due to that inconsistency. But at the same time, you've also got a quarterback who is, I would say, reasonably just as inconsistent. Because, again, as great as Martinez is, as much as you see those statistics, as much as you see this incredibly likable kid who goes out there week in and week out, it's not like you can count on him to go get you that win. When Tommy Frazier went out there, you knew the guy was going to go get you a win. Brooke, the same thing. Frost, the same thing. Number of other quarterbacks throughout Nebraska history, same thing. There were guys you could count on where you're looking at them going, oh, okay, this is the guy we need right here to go get us this win. In 4 years, I've never said that about Martinez. That where I'm looking at him going like, okay, now I get it. He may be the best athlete. He may be the best we've got right now, but that doesn't make him a great quarterback.
Do you think Adrian Martinez is the quarterback next year, or will he be a quarterback somewhere else next year?
That's going to be interesting because I've heard a lot of talk about that now where he's talking about, not he's saying this, but I'm hearing a lot of talk. I'm seeing a lot of smoke on social media that he's going to leave as a grad transfer and go someplace else.
I don't know if I could blame him, right? I mean, it's been 4 years is a long time any institution.
It is, and honestly, I don't think it's a fan thing in terms of he's gotten a huge amount of criticism from the fans. I think he would have gotten the same amount of criticism no matter where he's at with the level of play that we've seen from Martinez. If anything, I think he has far more people behind him saying, yeah, I'd really like to have him back as opposed to see him leave. So I don't think he's leaving because it's like, oh, these fans are assholes and they hate me here. I don't think that's the case. But I think he feels like, you know, I want to go someplace else, get in a different environment, get in a different coaching situation, and let's see what the end result is and see if I can do something better someplace else.
And there should be some pretty decent quarterbacks available. And this is hypothetical. We don't know if this is going to happen or not.
And I truly don't. A lot of people have been kind of poking me on social media indicating this. I don't know. I truly haven't heard
anything. The hottest quarterback out there is going to be Spencer Rattler because there's no way he's going to stick around at Oklahoma, right? I mean, you now have a true freshman step in and take your spot and look really good. Kirk Herbstreit writes yesterday, oh, my God, if you're not watching number 13 from Oklahoma, this guy's amazing. Well, the writing's on the wall for Spencer Rattler. Does he end up at Nebraska? Does he end up at Iowa State? Does he end up somewhere in the SEC?
But you've got a guy there in Rattler who's pretty inconsistent also.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, he was considered like the Heisman Trophy front runner. Now he's like benched. And why? Because of that inconsistency, making poor decisions, throwing interceptions at the wrong time, just not being able to get over that hump of and even though they were unbeaten, but it took that Texas game to turn it around, right?
I mean, sometimes it's even one of these things where when you look at a guy like that, they're winning in spite of him. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not saying Spencer Rattler is not a great athlete who doesn't have a great arm, who doesn't run incredibly well. He does. He's amazing. He's also really inconsistent.
It was so funny. Rob and Travis, here's a concise question for Rob after the Minnesota loss. If the Huskers win anymore, are we learning to prioritize other things in life besides the nonsense that happens in the stadium? Be honest. Do you use your Saturdays to do other things yet?
I love that because my son sent me a tweet that he saw where it was somebody put out on Twitter. I can't remember the way they phrased it. It was basically like, we've gotten all we're going to get out of this. It's time to go outside, mow the lawn, and salvage your Saturday. And
you are doing anything like that because you're going with your son on college football trips, and you're like, okay, I don't feel this need to. I can watch the replay on the Big Ten Network or somewhere else. I can go do something else on Saturday and enjoy my family.
Yeah. It's, you know what? I love Nebraska. I love Nebraska football. Believe me when I say that. I grew up in Lincoln, for God's sakes. Nobody wants to see them succeed more than me. But God, it gets painful watching. And it's those expectations that you have what they should be doing versus what they are doing in terms of the product that you see out on the field. It becomes maddening.
So Nebraska has a bye week. Couldn't really come at a better time, right? You've lost two in a row, 32-29 to Michigan. You lost 30-23. Is this a good time for a bye or not a good time?
I would have liked to have seen the bye week this past week.
So instead of playing Minnesota now, you'd like to see the 16th been the bye week.
Yeah, do the bye week and kind of get over that, get over yourselves over the performances that you'd had in these losing efforts, but they were incredible emotional performances. It took a ton of mental and emotional output to do that. Rest up, and it allows you to get kind of a little bit of a reset. And I think they go out and you see a different product if they have a bye week in front of it, just because, you can kind of refill that tank a little bit.
Four games left for Nebraska: Purdue, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa. Weird thing is, they could win three or four of those, or they could lose all four of them.
Agreed. We lost to Illinois.
I mean, they're not beating Ohio State. Sorry. Yeah. That ain't
happening. But, I mean, it's they lost to Illinois, dude. I mean, they could lose to anybody. If you can lose to Illinois, and I mean, I've seen some games over the last few years that I'm watching them, and it's just it's one of those, how do you lose this? I mean, it defies explanation. The Minnesota game last year, they still 21 or 26 players who couldn't make the trip because of injuries and COVID. That I mean, they almost had to forfeit that game. That's how few of guys they brought along. Nebraska came out with a game plan last year against Minnesota that was. At least in hindsight, you look at it and you go, it's guaranteed to fail. The same thing against Illinois. I mean, it was just one of those that game was guaranteed to tank. And it's one of those, they can lose any game against any opponent. Illinois is horrible. I mean, you think Nebraska's bad right now. Illinois is a disaster, and we lost to them.
Where the Purdue game gets interesting now, because I think Nebraska will beat Purdue. I do.
I don't know.
But where it's changed now is Purdue sitting at 2-1 in the Big Ten has a legitimate shot at the West title if it keeps winning, because it would have the tiebreak over Iowa, right? I mean, Iowa's got Minnesota left, and it's got Wisconsin left. It has Illinois, Northwestern, and Nebraska left. Nebraska just has four games left. So it'd be interesting to see how this all unfolds. But again, the schedule is it's an interesting schedule where it can win. I believe it can win three of the four, but it could lose all four, no problem.
It could. I mean, you look at what Purdue did against Iowa. If Purdue comes out and has – I mean, this was against Iowa, at Iowa, on freaking homecoming.
Yes. Now,
Purdue's got the capability to win some games here. I mean, it's just...
I'm going to give you a scouting report. Cover David Hall. Because after that, there's nobody. After that, there's literally nobody. And if you don't cover David Hall, he'll shred you. He'll look like a Heisman Trophy winner. Yeah. If you cover him, stop him, you're going to win the game. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, though, Nebraska's... They are perfectly capable of screwing that up. As obvious as that might seem on the surface to look at that and say that, we lost to Illinois. That's my go-to explanation here.
Ed Orgeron, who won a national title 2 years ago, is out at LSU. He's going to finish the season. He was the third highest football coach in America behind Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. So we're talking about money now, right? So he signed a 6-year deal. I'm transitioning into Scott Frost here because the email's been lit up. People want to know what's it take. What does it take for Scott to lose his job, not keep his job? What does it take for Scott to lose his job, if anything?
I think if Nebraska has either a 2017. I'm counting in my head here. Either a 2017 or a 2007-esque meltdown, like you did in the last years of Bill Callahan and Mike Riley, I could see him being. I think that's what it would take for him and Alberts to sit down and say, "All right, we gotta pull the plug here." But I think you'd have to see this complete and utter meltdown if they go out. In all honesty. And it's got to be ugly. Now, let's say they go out and they have a Michigan-esque loss to Ohio State and Iowa and Wisconsin. Then I think Trez's going to sit here and say, oh, okay, you know what? That was not a good-looking year. But let's do this. We're going to give you one more season. We're going to set some parameters. You got to meet these parameters. And as somebody mentioned to me on Twitter, you tell Scott, if there's changes you got to make within your program, personnel-wise on the coaching staff, if there's changes you got to make, go make those changes. And we've got you for at least one more year then.
I mean, you can look at the close games, and I know people have been excited, but at the end of the day, your wins are against Fordham, Buffalo, and Northwestern right now.
Yeah, but this is the first – I mean, this game against Minnesota, the interesting thing here is this was the first time I watched Nebraska play and go, huh, I'm not impressed with what the defense is doing.
And that's why I brought up the defense
now,
first,
both
because
sides,
I agree with you on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, both sides of the ball looked bad, but this was really the first time both sides looked bad. Illinois, the defense gave up two long drives in the second half, but I think, in all honesty, I think the defense had basically been living on the field at that point on a 105-degree day, that they just ran out of gas because they'd been living on the field. I think most of the fault in all of this leading up to today has been the offense's fault. Against Minnesota, I thought it was both. It's the first time I've been able to really say that this season. So, but I think if they go out and have one of those Michigan-esque, Oklahoma-esque losses, I think Frost stays for another year. I think if they have this complete meltdown and we see these where you can just kind of tell everybody sort of cashed it in, like you saw end of the Callahan era, end of the Riley era, if that happens, then I think – I don't even think Trev has to fire him. I think Trev and Frost get together and Frost says, yeah, it's just not working. Let's move on.
Which would be crazy, just absolutely crazy. I mean – And that's where we're at. It's an amazing time.
I'll say this. I don't want Ed Orgeron as head coach.
No. You know, a lot of people like
– I think it'd be funny listening to him talk. He sounds like the assistant coach from The Waterboy. But it's – dude, look at Orgeron, though. I mean, the one season that you look at him career-wise and go, oh, my God. He freaking rocked it.
Took a burrow.
Yeah.
Somebody who wanted to play at Nebraska.
I mean, it took catching lightning in a bottle a little bit here where you had, 17 NFL draft picks on one team. Moment he didn't have that, all of a sudden it wasn't quite as good. Now, and he lost, as far as assistant coaches go, was it both coordinators? Well,
yeah, he lost both coordinators. His offensive coordinator went to Carolina Panthers to be with Matt Rhule, and then his defensive coordinator went to Baylor to be the head coach there.
So you've got two really good – I mean, I think you had a really, really good coaching staff.
Yeah.
And you had 17 draft picks on one team. It's – that'll win you a lot of national titles.
But you would think it would keep you longer than 2 years after you win a national title. You would think.
Yeah, but at the same time, too, he's had these little flashes of, oh, God, he looks like they're doing pretty good. It's never been more than a year or two anywhere he's been the head coach. It just hasn't. He has not shown sustained success at an expected level any place he's been.
You know what he's really good at? Recruiting. He is.
Yeah,
he's
I'll give you that.
And that's why he'll end up as a coordinator somewhere or he'll be a recruiter somewhere. Yeah.
I would totally take Orgeron. Every place I've seen him as a coordinator, they always do really well. I'll take Ed Orgeron as an O coordinator any day. I don't want him as a head coach.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what jobs come open. And did you see what happened at Tennessee, man? Did you see all those guys throwing? Lane Kiffin got hit with a golf ball.
He did. Did this guy throw the water bottle at him and he caught it?
Yeah, he caught it, which is awesome. You know, I know people don't like Lane Kiffin, and I get it. He's a polarizing figure. But he's embraced it, and he has fun with it. He's self-deprecating.
He has grown on me hugely. Was it Florida Atlantic?
Florida Atlantic.
So when he hit Florida Atlantic, there's kind of like a reset button he hit there because previous to Florida Atlantic, he was like this spoiled asshole brat.
Yes.
He really was. And then since then, he gets to Florida Atlantic, and it was kind of, I kind of need to remake this.
I live in Boca Raton. The average age here is 78 years old.
Oh, my God. He was funnier than hell.
Yeah, and
he's a great Twitter follow.
And he's been funny. Even when he screws up, he makes fun of himself. When, you know, the drop the popcorn thing, and he comes out with popcorn, and then you know, he just said, you know, yesterday, they don't like me here. He goes, I saw a lot of people waving number one at me, but it wasn't the, it was the, The middle finger, number one, you know?
Yeah, but that's the thing is, I mean, he's kind of turned into sort of this younger blonde-haired Mike Leach. Like, it's just kind of the sort of that funny humor, but it's intelligent and it works. And he's doing pretty damn good at Ole Miss.
He's doing really well. Of course, they beat Tennessee yesterday. And the big question is, will anybody want Lane Kiffin? Because there is baggage that goes with Lane Kiffin. There is a sense of arrogance that you know you're going to have to get with Lane Kiffin. So he's not going to be for everybody. But it's not like Ole Miss is a bad job. It's not a bad job.
Well, that'd be my question. Do you leave Ole Miss?
No.
I mean, from a recruit.
Well, having been to Oxford, Mississippi, I would live in Oxford, Mississippi tomorrow, man.
Yeah, but would you – I mean, I'm just talking from a football job standpoint. How good of a recruiting location is that? I mean
– not good.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, it's not like – I mean, do you look at Tuscaloosa and go like, oh, my God, it's heaven here?
Well, when you see Bryant-Denny Stadium in the museum – you go, okay, this is a football powerhouse. You get it. But you're right. I've been to Tuscaloosa. It's nothing to write home
about.
Yeah,
it's not like you look at Tuscaloosa and go like, oh, man, this
is
freaking
is any college town that great? I mean, even – I mean, really, is any college town that great?
Well
– now, I'm not saying atmosphere. I'm just talking town in general, right? Because when school's out for the summer, a lot of these towns just aren't that cool.
Yeah, Tallahassee's pretty nice. Well, Gainesville, Coral Gables – Pasadena.
Okay, but you're talking about LA. I don't know about Lots.
I don't know about USC. The campus is nice. I don't know if the town's all that great.
Well, yeah.
I know a lot. I mean, people love Eugene.
Yeah, I get it. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Lincoln, Nebraska's a
yeah
destination.
Ames,
location.
Iowa City, Iowa. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing.
No, I get it. But I mean, yeah, there's college towns that are freaking awesome places to be. I just, my question is when you look at, and I guess the where I'm looking at this, when you look at a powerhouse, Big Ten, ACC, I'm thinking like a Clemson.
Yeah.
ACC school, Florida State, Miami, et cetera. You look across the landscape of the SEC, do you leave Ole Miss to go to one of those others?
Well, it's interesting about Ole Miss or the SEC is I've never seen that in the Pac-12 now. They all just kind of go within their own conference. It's weird how the SEC – you don't see that much in the Big Ten, right? You don't see a Big Ten coach going to another Big Ten institution.
No, you really
don't. You
didn't
see it in the Big 8 or the Big 12.
No, you don't.
In the SEC, you see it a lot.
Well, because I think you go from one school to the other, I think you're kind of, in terms of the accessibility to the recruiting, I think you're kind of on even footing.
Yeah.
And I think from a fan interactive standpoint, a fan interest standpoint, the alumni bases at all those schools love those schools. So it's I think if you've got even a halfway decent product, they're going to fill the stadium. So I look at Lane and I look at Ole Miss, and I'm not sure he leaves there to go to – and again, I know people at Nebraska are kind of having this – You play a little bit of this game. I'm not saying we need to get rid of Scott Frost or we should or it's going to happen. But you can't tell me people are kind of going through in their heads, hey, if not Scott Frost, who would I like to see? And I guarantee you Lane Kiffin's name is popping.
Oh, I brought that up a couple weeks ago, and I got a lot of hate mail for that.
People. Yeah, and I mean, we're going to get some pushback for me saying it. And again, I'm not saying we're getting rid of Scott. I'm not even saying we should get rid of Scott. My hope would be they don't that even if Nebraska doesn't win out, my hope is Trev holds on to Frost throughout the end of the season. I really do. I hope he sticks around.
There it is, the definitive word from Dr. Rob. Now, there is a bye week, but don't worry because we're going to be back next week. We're actually going to talk natural turf against synthetic turf. We heard Trev Albert say they're going to replace the turf at Memorial Stadium. Why not put natural grass inside Memorial Stadium? Why not go back to natural grass? We're going to have a former Nebraskan who now works at Penn State, who happens to specialize in turf management and whether it'd be prudent for Nebraska to go to natural grass. And believe it or not, you might even be able to have some concerts inside the stadium. If you haven't followed Dr. Rob on Twitter, please do so at DocTalkSports. Give this podcast a like. Give it a review on wherever you listen to this, iHeart, Spotify, Google, iTunes. We like the likes. We like the reviews. Helps more people find this podcast. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.